Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
I'm Tessie.
And we are sisters-in-law, friends, women, podcasters, moms, communicators, so many different things. We wear so many different hats, as I'm sure you do too, listener. But we started this podcast because we found ourselves craving a community of people who like to dive deep into big topics, the topics of motherhood that stretch far beyond, you know, the best brand in diapers or things like that, that dig deep and prompt questions about how we're moving through this world as all of the things that we are. So we started the podcast to have these conversations with each other, to establish a community, and really to learn from each other. On Mondays, we interview women who we find to be fascinating. They're doing incredible things with their lives in huge ways, in tiny ways, all just inspiring us and our listeners, hopefully, to engage with that mama bear inside, with that force that's within us that asks the hard questions, that jumps up when she sees an injustice, and really tries to walk through the world in a meaningful manner. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do on Mondays. We interview these women that are fantastic. And then on Wednesdays, we talk to each other. We find articles. We find topics that are just burning holes in our little hearts, and we try to talk about those. But today is Monday, and so we are bringing you a conversation with Margo Starbuck. It would be cool if she was like a founder of Starbucks.
It would be cool.
She's actually cooler than that. She's a woman of many talents. But we center our conversation today on a book that she co-authored called Overplayed, A Parent's Guide to Sanity in the World of Youth Sports. After our mini on youth sports, which we dropped months ago and remains one of our most listened to podcasts, mm-hmm. a Mama Bear listener actually recommended that we have Margo on the podcast, and we are so glad that we did.
We are, because with Margo, we really took our mini episode and expanded it because she's so knowledgeable. Obviously, she wrote a book on it, right? Mm-hmm. And she was so well researched on the subject from having to dive deep into the subject. Plus, Margo's funny. We had a really great time with her. We actually experienced quite a few technical difficulties during our time with Margo, which hopefully you guys will not notice, but it really speaks to the fact that she was so gracious. We had such a great time with her.
Yeah, she really was. And that was my fault. So, sorry. But she was so gracious. And this was, of course, it was a conversation on the perils of youth sports, but it's even more so about what happens when we use our mama bear instincts without thinking it all the way through.
Yes.
So let's be real. There are parents that you sometimes see in the stands who look exhausted because perhaps they spent a weekend in Canada with their son, or they're now in Texas with their daughter for another tournament. Like, these things are long and exhausting. Their heart is in the right place. They're
absolutely
doing this for their kids. But as Margo shows, and again, with such great research, such great knowledge, perhaps it's time to take a look at the very real risks being done to our kids when we misplace that well-intentioned mama bear spirit.
It's super well-intentioned. These people love their kids just as much as we love ours, right? Of course. And we didn't really just talk about all the ways we've gone wrong in our society with regards to youth sports either. We talked about the way we can engage our mama bears for good in this youth sports culture. And I think that's an equally important reminder. We gave some practical tips that Margo had thought of as well when she was writing this book.
Yeah. And again, this was a listener suggestion. This is a topic that we know resonates with you guys. And so we wanted to revisit it. And even though we're talking specifically about youth sports here with Margo, this is her area of expertise. you have to know that there is this capability within us as moms of artists, of dancers, of instrumentalists, of, you know, decathletes and academic decathletes.
Yes.
A big distinction there. The academic decathletes, the math leaguers, the chess clubbers, wherever there is competition for kids, there too are parents who want the very best for their kiddos.
Exactly, exactly. So let's get into some really great advice from Margot on how we can support and encourage our kids and still protect them the way any mama bear worthy of that name would do.
Margot Starbuck is a speaker, a writer, a mom, and author of many books, including Overplayed, A Parent's Guide to Sanity in the World of Youth Sports. After our mini on youth sports, a Mama Bear listener wrote in and recommended that we read this book and speak to one of its authors. After reading the book, we realized that that listener was right, and we are thrilled to welcome Margot to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. Welcome, Margot.
Thank you so much.
Margot, we always like to start our interview by asking our guests just a little bit about what their childhood was like. So specifically for you, we'd love to know if you've always kind of been into books and into writing. What about sports? How did your early years just really shape the person that you are now?
I love this question. It makes me want to listen to every single one of your podcasts. So in first grade, I was really fired up about a particular injustice. And I said to myself as a six-year-old, when I grow up, I'm going to write a book about this and then people will have to listen to me. So I sort of knew I didn't have much going for me as a six-year-old. And the name of that book was going to be Adults Think That Little Kids Can't Walk Big Dogs, But They Totally Can. I've not found a publisher for it yet, but that was book number one. And then other things in life happened. And I actually just started writing about 8 years ago. And sports definitely did them all. And I guess that's probably because of my mom, right? When I was, before I could sign up for things, ballet, swim, baseball, softball, basketball, track. And I loved what my body could do. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I think athletics are so great for girls in terms of learning to understand their bodies, in terms of what they can do rather than just how they appear. So I would say that the opportunity to be involved in sports gave me a lot of confidence.
Mm-hmm. So you said your mom really signed you up. Was she also athletic, or she just knew that it was a good way to kind of teach you some of the best part about it, get you involved, not have you sitting around? What was her reason for doing
that's
that?
That's great. You know, I never really thought about it. She was not real active athletically herself, but I think that, you know, we lived in a suburban community and I think she just wanted to give me every opportunity. So when, you know, when there were possibilities, she wanted to give me the chance to try everything, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We always like to know about the moms, you know, we feel particularly like, where is our role in that? Because obviously you have a pretty sane idea of youth sports as well. So, you know, I mean, as a mom, I'm like, it's probably her mom. I mean, you know.
Yes, we love the moms of the moms that we interview for sure.
Yeah. So let's dive right into your book, Overplayed. You co-authored the book with David King. What made you, I mean, I personally love the idea of your first book that you thought of when you were six, but what made you both want to write about the youth sports culture? When did that come up?
Yeah, you know what? Dave is the athletic director at Eastern Mennonite University, and he'd been doing a lot of speaking around this issue. He saw what youth sports was doing to families, doing to athletes, and had been concerned about it for a while. And his editor, who knew me and my writing, approached me about sort of joining in this with him. And it could have been a horrible fit, right? You know, parents come at this from so many different angles. Mm-hmm. And I think Dave and I are still surprised just what a really great fit that it's been. And one of the things Dave sees at the college level is the toll that sports are taking on young people. And, you know, kind of what I see at my stage, my three kiddos, they're all teens now. They've all been involved in sports. And I see families who are stretched, like time-wise, financially. And my heart is for these families to experience freedom.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And is that something, you know, you were approached by an editor to write this. So did they approach you because they thought that you would be passionate about this subject? Or did you become passionate as you learned?
Yeah, and you know what? I wrote a book on beauty and body image called Unsqueezed. Mm-hmm. And sort of the premise is, I mean, it's a book for girls and women, but the premise is that our bodies aren't just ornamental, although they're very beautiful, they're also instrumental. And so I think they did know that this is something that I would care about, and it just happened to be a really great fit. And I have done a lot of sort of learning on this journey. And of course, I'm sort of hyper aware when I'm sitting in the bleachers or the stands or something. But it's just, yeah, it has become something that I care a lot about.
So yeah. Just really quick, I have to ask this question. Like, do people know in your community, do they know you've written this book? And then are they really like watching for your response on the sideline? Like, no, I feel like there'd be a little pressure.
I think most folks haven't caught on yet. I sort of sheepishly gave it to the athletic director at my kiddo's high school.
Okay.
Just in this short conversation, I was so glad that he really sees something very similar. And I thought it was interesting. He thinks that schools, you know, because sometimes families will choose between doing their sports at school or doing their sports sort of on the road. Mm-hmm. And the way he views school sports is that when it happens in that context, the child can be seen as a whole person, right? The teachers know how they're doing in school. They notice how they're doing emotionally. And I just found that really compelling, where you have this kind of whole community that's looking at the whole child. I thought that was pretty cool.
That is. It's a really interesting point. That's great.
Yeah, I remember that from, I went to a bigger high school, but even still, one of the things that kept me out of trouble, honestly, is like when all of my friends were doing the things that high schoolers do, I knew that people were watching me always. You know, my teachers were my coaches. And so, and they hear everything. Let's be real here. Teachers hear everything, you know? And so it was always like, hey, what happened in your last quiz? And I had just gotten the paper back 5 minutes ago, you know? So I think you're right. I think that's the beauty. There is a very community-oriented aspect to school sports. I hadn't really thought about that since my days a few decades ago. But that's good. I love that. And it's so different than what you write about in your book. You know, your book is very centered on kind of, well, youth sports in general, but really specifically the travels, teams, the AAUs, the kind of insanity surrounding that. And we actually did a podcast on this as well. And to this day, it's one of our most popular, most listened to, most shared episodes. And I'm wondering from your perspective, like, why do you think it's hit this zeitgeist moment where people know that it's out of control, but they don't really know what to do about it? Why do you think we're talking about it more?
Gosh, I think that families kind of know something's out of whack and they're yearning for balance, because we make all these compromises, missed meal times, financial sacrifice, our kids aren't making friends, playing with friends in the neighborhood, maybe they are doing the elite teams and they're not playing for their schools. And I think families are just itchy to be sort of whole and healthy about it. I feel like part of what I want to be about is convincing families that the occasional no could be the very best thing for their kids and for their whole families. I think we want to do right by our kids, but I also think that that might look different than the culture has led us to believe. Mm. So that's why I love that you guys are talking about it and that these conversations are beginning to happen, so we can really ask the question, like, what does it look like to be for our children?
Mm,
But yeah, I love how you say that people are itching for this. And Tessie, I just wanted to remind you that honestly, our two most listened to episodes are sports, the youth culture of sports, and sex. Right. So we did one on sex and one on sports, and those have been the most listened to. So I think you're absolutely right that people are feeling the pinch and feeling like something's a little bit off here and just itching for more information and just to know how to make better or different choices.
This is so weird. I just got back from a walk with a friend who is, I don't know the magic medical words. Let's say OBGYN. And she used a phrase I hadn't heard before, which is like something like date of debut. And I realized that debut means the age at which kids have sex. And when I mentioned we were going to be talking about youth sports, her face sort of lit up. And like girls who are involved, I'm assuming, I guess I don't know about boys, but girls who are involved in youth sports have a later like date of debut.
Oh my goodness. Date of debut. Yes.
I was just going to say date of debut sounds way better than like losing your virginity. That's going to be, I'm definitely so taking true. That on. Date of debut. Literally writing that down. That's amazing. And hilarious. But also fascinating. I mean, that actually brings me to one of the other things I wanted to ask you, because unlike our podcast, which really just gave kind of anecdotal evidence from our time in youth sports, our kids' time in youth sports, what we're seeing on the ground, you offer statistics, you know, from professionals and in various capacities. Why was it important for you guys to include actual statistics rather than just, because you give really great proof about the other stuff that's happening that's not really easily statistically proven, right? But you do offer some hard evidence what's going on and how it's gone poorly.
Yeah. Thankfully, Dave's been a big reader. I love that you're asking this question, because I think that parents are touchy about our, of course we're touchy about our parenting choices. We want to believe in our heart of hearts that we're doing it all right. And so I do think that statistics allow us to see a little bit more clearly the harm that our kids might really be facing. So one of the statistics is that half of high school sports injuries are overuse injuries. So 50% of the injuries. And I read someplace that in this article, it said that like 50% of those are avoidable. And you know what? I said to myself, that doesn't seem right. I'm pretty sure if we're talking about overuse injuries, 100% of those are avoidable, right? Those
right.
are about the choices. I mean, some of the choices our kids are making, but mostly the choices that we're making for our children to be playing four seasons in a year, to be playing 6 days a week. So it sort of takes it out of the realm of my opinion, your opinion, and looking at this is really what kids are facing. Another one that I thought was really compelling, and this was a study in the UK, that 75% of young adults who had participated in youth sports reported psychological harm. So either they felt bullied, they felt criticized by their coaches, torn apart by their parents. 75%, just heartbreaking. And so, you know, as moms, we kind of see a little bit of this on the field or in the bleachers. But I do think that some of these numbers help us see what's happening to our kiddos a little more clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you quoted that, the statistic about half of the injury seen in the ER, I was thinking, you know, I've been in the ER so many times with five kids. It's like I've had so many stitches, I can't even count them. But it's from being just kids, from running around, from falling. One kid somehow managed to swallow like half a tree. I don't even know what happened there. But, you know, like these random things. But I got like that sick feeling in my stomach to hear, I didn't hear of a single overuse injury. I played four sports throughout high school. I knew no one who had an overuse injury in high school, you know? And to hear that this is happening in middle and high school is insane to me, because I totally agree with you that 100% of those are avoidable. The reason I love that you pointed to that is because you said it before too, and I just kept coming back to it throughout the book, is that we think we're doing a service to our kids by keeping them focused on, say, baseball because they love it, whatever. And we want them to go to college and then on to the majors, right? But hello, clearly, if you knew that the odds are good that they're going to have an overuse injury before they even get to that stage, would you do it? Probably not. And yet the stat proves that's true.
Mm-hmm. So Margo, go back to what you were talking about of just the emotional toll of sports, because when you first said that, I thought that's like the opposite of what I would think of athletes participating in youth sports. You know, I think part of the benefit of being on the team is that you're on a team, right? Like, it's the idea of being on a team and understanding how to coexist together and build each other up and lift each other up and have that kind of cohesive relationship and just a place to practice those relationships. Because of that statistic, those numbers surprise me. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. 75% of young adults reporting psychological harm is disturbing. And so, of course, it makes me think of, you know, what my kids are experiencing as they're playing sports. And it feels like some of that could be coming from other players if they're hazed, if they're bullied. Some of that can be coming from coaches. We've had some great coaches, and if I'm honest, we've had some stinkers. You know, coaches who don't seem really emotionally mature, where they will place winning above, you know, a child's heart or what's best for a particular child, sort of winning at all cost, criticizing this sort of macho ideal. And I also know that some of that psychological harm that kids are experiencing is coming from us as parents. And it's so hard to see that. But a coach at the high school that I attended in Illinois had a girl who was trying out, maybe she was trying out for field hockey. And she said to the coach after the first day of tryouts, like, please cut me. Her family had invested so much time, money, energy into her field hockey, and she was begging the coach to cut her.
Oh my goodness.
And the coach said, you know, what's up with that? She said, you know what? I don't want to play, but I can't tell my parents. You know, it means too much to them. And so I was, of course, so glad that he encouraged her. He said, I'm not going to cut you. This is a conversation that you need to have with your parents. But when we've got those crazy goggles on, like, we don't even realize all this energy that we're bringing to it, and our kids get it, right? They sense that when we bring our crazy to it.
Mm. Oh yeah. I mean, you were being really kind there. I would say most of it is the parents, because I think, I mean, only because if you have a stinker coach, we've all had them, right? But your parents are not crazy, then the coach doesn't really matter. They still teach you, you know, like I still teach my kids, you still got to respect them. I get that they are not your cup of tea. Don't listen to them when they yell at you when you make a mistake. Understand that, you know, you can kind of navigate that a little bit. But if your parent is equally invested in the outcome, like, you're screwed, you know? And so I think it just weighs heavier on the parents, which is good news and bad news. It's good news because you have more control over the situation, you know?
Yeah.
So it's true. As parents, we have control, right? And I think sometimes we forget that. And Margo, in the book, right out of the gate, you write that only 57% of families are having dinner together 5 nights a week. And much of that is because, you know, we all know there's practices, there's games, there's lots and lots of stuff going on. This is troubling, really, because I think a lot of us have heard, and it's been proven, that family dinners have a ton of positive benefits. One of the benefits is a decrease in high-risk behavior on the part of the kids who are able to have those consistent meals with their families.
Also known as earlier date of debut. Am I right? Am I right?
Yes. Thank you, Tessie.
You're welcome.
You're absolutely right.
I knew you would love that. I knew you would love that interjection.
And, you know, I know that I, in my heart, want to make this a priority, even though our kids are in youth sports, but sometimes it's really, really hard. So why do you see that statistic, that 57% of families? Why is that problematic in your view?
Yeah, gosh, I think you named it. And I would say that that dinner time is sort of like glue for our families. It's like sticky meat, carb, veggie glue that is so important in offering our kids this rich, healthy, stable experience. And I do want to be careful, like it can be a little too easy to pit, say, sports against dinner time or sports against, you know, for some folks, it's going to be sports against Sunday morning church. But more, I'm wanting to help families pause and notice this is something we value. Let's say mealtime. This is something we value. So why aren't we living that out? And Dave and I really encourage families to pause, I would say either once a year or before each sports season, to identify and re-identify what they value most. I think most of us are just so busy, like making lunches and buying new sneakers, that we don't pause to say, hey, what are the things that we really want to be about as a family? And if it's that, if it's building the bonds, you know, in our family, in our neighborhood, then we're going to have to make some choices that support that. So I would love to see more families just taking a pause to identify what it is that they most value.
Margo, one of the best parts about the book, I thought, was that you guys really stressed this idea of sitting down, coming up with family values, right? And because the family values will really give you a good glimpse into not just what you want with your family, but what the kids want too, you know, giving them some aspect, some agency as well. And then you can say, like, if there's a tournament 10 hours away for a weekend, you can say, oh, does this go towards our family value? Does this not go towards our family value? You know, I love this idea of just being able to have something tangible to look back on and see if you're headed the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels like something that should be posted on the fridge.
It does. It does. You mentioned it earlier too, but you talk about the financial cost of youth sports. You said at one point in the book that families making $50,000 annually are spending as much as 10.5% of their gross income on youth athletics. And then you kind of go on to say, you know, the term elite, as in like an elite team, refers not only to a specific level of team play, supposedly related to athletic ability, but also to the upper middle class who can afford it. And I just kept thinking, we touched on this in our podcast as well, but I just kept thinking, this is totally an un-American thing, you know? Like, we like to believe that everyone has access to the American dream. I mean, if you've been paying attention, you know that's not true. But so many people assume that the American dream is offered to everybody. And specifically with athletics here, that's impossible, right? If you can't afford to spend 10% of your income on one each child, then you're never going to be able to make these elite teams, right? So what do we do about this? What do we make of this?
Girl, this is something that I care a lot about. I have lived in neighborhoods where not only are kids who don't have a lot of privileges not getting to sign up for these teams at, you know, age 4, 5, and 6, they do start later, but there are also big obstacles for them even to play for their middle and high school teams. So, you know, maybe mom is working and she can't get the physical that allows you to try out for the team, or a family doesn't have transportation for that child to get to summer conditioning. And gosh, there's certainly not margin to spend a couple hundred dollars on a weekend club trip, hotel, you know, to a nearby city. So I want to challenge parents who do have more stability to work not just for the good of your kid, but for the good of other kids. So help a neighbor who might not have the opportunity to sign up, like find her a scholarship, or give a child rides to practice with your kid. In high school, I have coaches who will ask for like $125, and that's for like team swag, the the sweats, the sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. And there's so many families in our schools that can't afford that. So sometimes I will try to slip the coach some money and say, like, don't talk about it. But if there's a kid you know that can't afford this mess, like, I don't want them to feel embarrassed. Gosh, it gets so pricey. And, mm-hmm. you know, just thinking about sort of where we are right now in America, I think of my granddad who grew up during the Depression and, like, you know, his aunt would give him like the last pork chop for dinner. And we had this mindset, like, we all want our kids to do better than us and have every opportunity. But you know what? This is a different day than it was for my granddad. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our kids have more than enough. And I think a lot of us do have that margin to start noticing what it is that other people's kiddos might need.
Oh, yeah. You know, we talk, obviously the podcast is called Mama Bear Dares, and we dare our listeners to, like, harness the power of that mama bear, that righteous anger. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree with you. This is one of the ways we can do it, is by offering to give the kids a ride who are not going to be able to be there because their parents are working multiple jobs. Or I love that idea, just giving, hey, here's some money. Please don't say anything. But if a kid says, oh, I wish I could get that sweatshirt, get them that sweatshirt. That is one really simple way that we can engage our mama bear and make sure that everyone's having access to the same things our kids are, just because we're a little more stable. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Margo, I think that is a great use of the mama bear. I absolutely love that. And I also think, I know we talked about it earlier, but our mama bear can engage in protecting our kids from overuse injury. You know, I mean, let's talk about that a little bit more, because that might not be something quite so obvious at first, but that is such a simple way that we can really do the work and look out for our kids.
Yeah. Without realizing it, I feel like we're pushing them toward injury, but you know what? They're not machines. Like, kids' bodies weren't made to throw 200 pitches in a weekend. And I don't think it's on the kids to recognize that. It really is on us as parents and also coaches. You know, no Little League championship is worth a lifetime of, you know, not being able to use your right arm.
Yes.
And I will say, when Overplay, you know, first came out in the spring, I started hearing from young adults, I wish my parents had read this. And so I know one of the guys was like 25, like, had been a baseball player, and his arm is shot for the rest of his life. A young woman, I forget what her sport was, but they're saying, like, I wish my parents had known this. Because I think we have good intentions, but whether we're not educated or we're misguided, we're pushing our kids further than their sweet little bodies should be pushed. So I really hope the podcast, the book can start these conversations so that as parents, we can kind of hold up that mirror of sanity for one another.
So, Margo, I mean, I watched the movie Concussion with my family, but honestly, that is really the only research that I've done on youth sports. And that is a very popular movie and popular thing that a lot of people saw, but many of us aren't really digging anywhere else. Why do you think that is? Why does it take Will Smith being in a movie to kind of begin that conversation? Or am I just completely out of it? Like, why don't we know some of these things better than we do?
You're right, though. Will Smith movie is probably better than any book that people may or may not read. Gosh, it's funny. I think we kind of want to believe it won't happen to us. Like, maybe, yeah, a guy who played for, you know, 25 years in the NFL or something, he's going to have problems. And we don't realize that really our young kiddos are being effective. I think that parents are beginning to catch on, because I was talking to a dad in the Denver area, and for his son's middle school football team, they did not have enough players coming out for a team to gel. And that's because so many parents in that area, probably who saw the movie, really do have concerns about what it is that we're putting our kiddos through. So I do think that education is is beginning to work and our eyes are starting to be opened.
And it's really hard because taking it from someone, I have kids who like just go out for their funsies. And then I have kids who like are diehard. And for my ones who are diehard and have some natural talent, everywhere we go, it's like, you need to get them in a league in Kalamazoo. You need to step it up. You need to do this. Like, they're not going to go anywhere unless you do this. And so it's so easy to get wrapped up, even for someone like me who knows about all of this and has resisted it for the better part of 14 years. I still am like, oh shoot, am I doing, is this wrong? You know, you think you're doing everything wrong as a parent. And so I think this is just another way of like, am I doing my kid a disservice by not getting them into these year-round leagues? I do think that's a part of it. Like, it's really, really hard to live counterculturally.
It really is. And even in that, though, like one of the things that I learned from Dave is, you know, before the age of 12 or 13, you really don't need to feel that pressure. Like, you can just let that go because they really don't need to be specializing to be getting into the more rigorous leagues. Like, until they're sophomore, junior, senior. Yeah, if they're really passionate about a sport at that point, like, sure, give them all these opportunities. But it's silly, this business about like soccer for, you know, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and already we feel like we're behind if we don't sign our kids up for it. I love it when parents are able to look at their child and see, I love that you've made that distinction, you know, the ones who are playing for the fun and the ones who really love it and it's life-giving for them. I hope more parents can kind of share that vision where you're noticing sort of the unique makeup of your child, because you are even going to make different choices for different kiddos based on who they are.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when you have a kid, either the kid does really love it or the parent thinks that the kid loves it? You know, is there a way that you can kind of coach parents to being involved in youth sports, but in a really healthy way? I guess that's sort of what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah. And I think that we really can have those good conversations with our kiddos, but they need to know that we're really listening and that we really want to hear from them, you know, for them to feel safe to sort of open up with us. But I would say just ask both sides of the question. You know, what do you enjoy about your sport? What's life-giving for you? And then also, hey, you know, is there anything you really don't like about this? You know, how is it death dealing for you? What's the worst part? And I think if we come at it with this sort of posture of being an authentic good listener and really wanting to hear from them, they're going to sense that. And I do think they're going to be willing to tell us the truth.
Yeah. I was really struck by this moment in the book too, that it was right after, around the time you guys were writing about the overuse injuries. I have a good friend whose son is, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11, and he plays a lot of baseball. He actually is dealing with an overuse injury right now and is out of football. She had said, you know, the problem is that he is sticking to pitch counts and everything, but he loves baseball so much that he then goes in the backyard after games and wants to throw it around with his dad. I have one of these obsessive kids myself, so I know this. You know, he actually this summer, his arm was hurting from pitching, and then he wanted to go play wiffle ball with his brothers. And we're like, no, you don't get to. You got to rest your arm. You don't get to do that, you know? And you say in the book, one of you writes, I don't remember which one now, but you're like, you know, this is how we do this. This is how we do this as parents. Are you ready? You say, my kid really loves ice cream too, but you don't give your ice cream. You don't give your kid ice cream all the time. You know, we have to look at youth sports the same way. Even if your kid really, really does genuinely love it, you still have to be the adult here. You still have to manage, just like you manage screen time, like you manage sugar. You have to manage what they're doing to their bodies and the time they're spending in these activities, whether they are obsessed with it or not.
Yeah, and I actually love framing it as being fierce mama bears, because mm-hmm. it's not that we're like naysayers, it's not that we don't appreciate sports, but we are going to be fierce about protecting every part of them, including their body. So, you know what, that's something, just that framework is something that emboldens me to say a no when I need to say a no, right? When we know we're doing the right thing for our kiddo mm-hmm. by being fierce.
Yeah. Yeah. Just be like, hey, kid, this is my mama bear. I'm sorry. She's out. She's proud. It's no, it's a hard no. I couldn't help but think too that you guys got kind of bold in the book, which I loved, when you recommended that parents help their kids identify and work towards realistic goals. So you're kind of talking, you know, is your kid really into sports? Are they really that athletic? You know, you were talking about like, just get to know your kid. What is really happening here? But I also kind of extended that metaphor a little bit, right? Extended it in saying, what boy and some girls don't grow up wanting to be a professional athlete? You know, I know my three older boys are convinced they're going to be in the pros, and I'm consistently like digging up statistics to prove them wrong in a very kind and gentle way, obviously. You know, I mean, something like only 2% of high school athletes win athletic scholarships to college, period, not even full rides, but just even a little bit. And then of course, even smaller percentages of those collegiate athletes make it to the pros. We actually dug up a few of the links that I often show my kids, so we'll put them in our show notes. But I mean, the improbability of anyone going past high school, let alone into the pros, it's like minuscule, right? And I feel like this is, I don't know if you're seeing this where you're seeing this. I just hear it constantly. Like, parents are obsessed with getting their kids scholarships, and they seem to justify the amount of time and money that they're spending on their kids, assuming that this is going to happen. And it's not, probably, right? What do we do about this? How do we break it to them? Do we just give them your book? I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. No, like, we hear this narrative that if you work hard, you can achieve anything. But actually, one of the things I learned from my co-author Dave is that there's this big genetic component. So, you know, on one hand, it's sort of remarkable that both Peyton and Eli Manning play in the NFL, but is it, right? Because right. there really is this, you know, genetic talent that can be passed down. And so, you know, in baseball, the very best professional baseball players have excellent vision. Mm-hmm. You know, like, who would know that? And so that's something that you can't work harder at. You can't get better at. You have it or you don't. But I love that question of, you know, how are we ever going to know if our children are sort of the super elite? And one thing I want to say is, before the age of 13, there's no way of knowing. Your kid might be the star of every team they play on. And this was the case for one of mine. And then as they get older, they're going to get passed by as other athletes develop. Like, statistics show that there's not a definite correlation between the ones who excel before 13 and what their performance is going to look like after 13.
Yes. Yes.
Statistics show this. You've given us a number, an age, like a concrete 13, guys.
Yeah, right? It's helpful, isn't it?
It is.
And I think about these coaches and these parents who, for example, you know, have the tall kid always play post in basketball, and they're not at all working on their ball handling skills, their passing, nothing. They're just posting them up. And then my oldest son was just like, oh man, puberty's really hit me like a truck. That was his exact phrase, because he's shot up and he's super thin because he shot up so quickly. And then puberty hits these kids like trucks. And then maybe they're the shortest kid, and now they have no abilities anywhere else, because and I keep thinking, like, does everyone forget about puberty? What's happening? Why are we making them so specific before then? Because you're right, they can be all-stars and then they can shoot up and have no idea which one's the right and left foot because everything's so foreign.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like we always need to be balancing to the child's ability with his or her like interest and drive. So maybe you have a kid who might really be fantastic at 14 and 15, but you know what? If the parent is forcing them to play 6 days a week, 50 weeks a year, like that child is going to burn out. And as soon as he's allowed to opt out, he will. So I feel like we need to say, like, parents, chill out. If your child has, you know, the talent, the ability, and the drive, like he or she will get there, but that we don't have to be quite as anxious about it as we are sometimes.
Yeah,
it's so true. I'm just sitting here, I'm just very curious just how this all happened. I mean, how did we go from, you know, the pickup games as kids to this ultra competitive kind of world that we now live in? I mean, I feel like it's been a shift since maybe like the 80s. I don't know. Margo, can you talk a little bit about just how we got here?
Gosh. Yeah. So I'm in my mid 40s. And when I was a kid, 70s, 80s, things were a bit more sane. And I want to say this, we're the only country that so closely links athletics and academics. I live in Duke land. So Duke basketball, Baylor football, you know, whatever it is in your area, because in other countries, athletics aren't tied to academic institutions. You know, South America, Europe, they'll have club teams where talent is developed, but not this weird system we've created where University of North Carolina football players, like who may or may not even want to be educated, have tutors who are doing their schoolwork for them, right? And then we throw money into this weird mix. And, you know, so part of this warped culture that we've created is that athletics, education, and money are so closely bound together, right? Because when there's dollars attached to it, it stops being about having fun. You know, I'm thinking of young ones now. You know, we want our kids to get a jump on other kids, so we sign them up for this crazy soccer business at 2 years old. And that's a real thing. I know a woman who's 10-month-old got the soccer flyer.
No, right? No.
We tell ourselves, because the money is involved, we tell ourselves it's an investment. But the reality is they would be better off if we either put the money in the bank or hired a tutor. Like, I mean, because of all those, the scholarship stats that you already know about.
Right. I wonder too about just that time investment. Like, would it be better if the kids were just playing a pickup game in the backyard, you know?
Yeah. Oh gosh, that feels like such a win some days.
Well, and you mentioned other countries and how they look at sports and just how different it is from the American version. Isn't it sometimes you're just like, how do we just keep screwing things up? No. but I loved in the book too, you talked about how soccer's my sport. I love it. I love watching it. I love playing it. And you made such a good point when you brought up the fact that like America has invested a lot of time and money into developing our American teams, World Cup, professional, you know, Olympic. And yet we still, except for the women, the men still really kind of suck compared to other international teams. And you brought up this idea that like, that's because it, on the international stage, they aren't doing club sports when they're 10 months old. You know, this is not a thing. They get this like rotten grapefruit and they kick it around with each other and they develop what's needed to be great at the game. You know, all of these things that club sports can sometimes ruin is happening in the backyard with their friends with a rotten grapefruit. And I thought that was a really great example of how this stress to put our kids in organized sports is really a disadvantage in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, it just feels like we've had the excess time, money, and energy to screw it up. And that's what we've done.
You know, and it probably started in a really great place. Like everything, you know, it probably started with good intentions. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I think you're right. When money is on the line, people get crazy. People get crazy.
That is fascinating. I mean, our family is a bit more removed from the youth sports culture, but I'm just learning so much from you all just about like the underbelly. Like it is, are there documentaries made on this? I mean, this is fascinating.
Oh, that's what you should do, Margo. Let's put another mm-hmm. thing on your plate. You should definitely do a documentary. I did laugh at one point in the book though, because I just was like, oh, Margo and I are total soul sisters, because you talked about how some of the goodness that's come from you with youth sports, with your kids, you say like some of it was accidental because your husband and you were just too lazy and too cheap to make more aggressive commitments to your children's athletic endeavors. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my husband and me. Like the other day we skipped practice because I'm like, I don't want to go into town. You guys, I'm in my pajamas. No practice. Everybody's having a really good meal at home. This is so us, you know. You know, when you go back to the family values like we talked about, do you really want your kids' childhood memories to be about all the road trips you take for your one other kid to go to his sporting or her sporting events? You know, is that what you want their childhood memories to be around, like getting dragged to another tournament? And I thought it was really good to like, hey guys, this is when we can celebrate our laziness. You know, like, no, this isn't what my kids don't want that for their childhood. Like embrace your inner lazy and just say no.
I love it. I kind of feel like there should be some like Mama Bear Dares like sorority or slacker mom club or something to support each other in our commitment to mediocrity.
I love it. We celebrate the lazy. That's right. But sometimes it just makes sense. I mean, it just, to me, it makes perfect sense.
And I'll say to our family, like, lazy and cheap has worked for us not only in athletics, but gosh, music lessons, art lessons. And you know what? My teenagers are happy and healthy and using their gifts. Like, they're absolutely fine without all the opportunities.
So that actually kind of pivots into my next question, which really it is about, is if a child wants to quit their organized sport, like, are they lazy? Quitters? Like, how do you handle that?
Yeah, I feel like it really is about paying attention to that child. Like, is your child enjoying the game? Like, does he dread game day? Or is he that kid who comes home from basketball practice and wants to shoot 100 more free throws in the driveway? Like, I don't think athletics has to be the path for every child. And maybe we just make this rule of thumb that before 13, like, just let them do it, have fun, you know, one practice a week, one game a week. But I do feel like that win is going to come when we notice our child and kind of who they are and what makes them tick. And if it's not their thing, giving them that permission to pursue that thing that is more about who they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's good. And I think we quoted this in our earlier podcast that of course we'll link in the show notes. But you also quote John O'Sullivan, a Division I men's soccer coach, who reported that 70% of children drop out of organized sports by the age of 13. So you've kind of talked about, you know, when do we let our kids drop out? When don't we? And that's, you know, about knowing the child. But he reports that some of the reasons they gave for quitting were kind of dark, really. Like, I'm tired of being criticized. I'm afraid to make mistakes. There's too much emphasis on winning, things like that are kind of heartbreaking. So if we sign our kids up because of all the really great things about youth sports, and again, like, there are great things about youth sports, you guys, how do we rein ourselves in so that they want to just be engaged in a healthy way beyond age 13?
Yeah. And I think that 70% of kiddos who are dropping out are burnt out, right? They're tired. They're done. And so I think one of the things we can do in the younger years, if we want it to stay fun for them, is to notice the kind of league that we're choosing. Now, I get, like, in Durham, North Carolina, and other cities, there's a lot of options. So we could kind of choose, yeah, we like this sort of low-key league. Our neighbor Andy's the coach. You know, we kind of like who he is. He'll drive them. We won't even have to show up.
Amazing.
Hashtag lazy mom.
Yeah.
I do get that, like, in other areas, there aren't going to be as many choices. But I'll say for parents who do have a choice, sort of notice the flavor, the commitment, the rigor of which league you're choosing, and do find ones where kids are having fun and they're not being stressed out, overwhelmed, overplayed.
Oh, that's so good. I know in our experience, honestly, my oldest son did YMCA soccer last spring, and it was really, in my kind of cynical heart, the first time I really was like, I love youth cults or youth sports culture, because it ended up that everyone, all the intense players, you know, were playing travel teams or it was something else. And then the YMCA was just this kind of this band of kids who just wanted to be outside running around, had no idea what they were doing, mostly, you know, but I was like, okay, I see a place for us in this whole thing.
That's great.
Yeah. Shout out to the Y. I think their programs are so good for that exact reason. I also, you know, you talked about how really before age 13, like, it's a wash, right? And you gave in the book this example of a boy named Alan who had signed up for baseball. His dad was a mathematician, and they were just kind of frustrated with the number of games his son was playing because it just far exceeded the number of practices, which we've all experienced this, have we not? I mean, this is kind of universal. And so the dad did some math and realized that if he and his wife committed just the time that they spent in their minivan to and from baseball with their son in the backyard practicing fundamentals of baseball, he'd have a much better chance of improving than he did on his little league team. And of course, like, this resonated for two reasons. One, it just really signifies the ridiculous amount of hours we all spend in our minivan, our gross, disgusting minivans. But then also, number two, I love this idea of just like, oh, you want your kid to really improve? Go in your backyard and help them with the fundamentals. That's it. That's how they really improve. I love that.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. And one of the things I've learned in this journey is that business of sometimes the travel teams are so focused on the games that kids aren't given the opportunity to learn these important fundamentals. So, yeah, I think it's a good point, like, not to assume that the path that may be right for one family is necessarily the path that's going to be right for your family.
Yeah. And what I love about this example too, is just that time spent in the minivan can be great. Let's not discount some of those great yes. car conversations that we have, you know, but I mean, there's something so, it's almost nostalgic about the idea of just playing catch with your son or kicking the soccer ball around with your daughter in the backyard. There's something so beautiful about those moments. And again, I think it's just realizing that, wait a second, even if I didn't go to, if I wasn't a successful high school athlete or whatever, like, my kid doesn't care. Like, they just want to throw the ball around and really probably even more than that, just hang out with a parent who's going to look them in the eye and talk to them while they're doing that activity.
One of the things we get into in the book is how important is it for parents to be at every game, right? That's sort of like where mom guilt comes in. I've got to be there. And it was so interesting that my mom, like, I think in her mind, she was at every game. I honestly don't remember her even being at one game. And in Dave's family, his dad didn't go to any of his games. But he knew that when his dad got off work, his dad would throw a baseball with him in the backyard. And, like, oh, I love that. That's what Dave's hanging on to, not like an aggressive, angry, like, blustery dad of the bleachers, but he had that time with his dad, which was so much better than, you know, the perfect record of parent game attendance.
Yes. And, you know, Margo, I have to tell you, I don't remember if my mom came to any of my games or not, but you know what I remember is that when we were taking the bus to games, she packed the best cooler lunches, dinners they were amazing. And that is what I remember of her participation in my youth sports experience, was that she packed a great cooler. Thanks, Mom. Shout out to my mom.
Oh, I totally want to step up my game now.
Yeah.
Cooler game.
That is really, really funny. I think it was an important aspect of your book, but you do not just talk about the underbelly of youth sports. You really go into why we all love it, why we want our kids to be involved in the first place, why it started. It teaches kids self-awareness, commitment, character, and it helps them socialize. Why was it important for you to include this in your book as well?
Oh, gosh. I guess, yeah, there's a lot of critiques that can be made, but both Dave and I are pro sports. And I thought it was interesting. He would say that that's where he learned the most about himself, about God, about his world. It was sort of this beautiful lab for awareness, growth, development. And for me, again, it gave me a lot of confidence in my body, in viewing it as instrumental and not just ornamental. And that is something that I took into adulthood. And then now I kind of have this peek at seeing the value of sports for my three teens. So the oldest, she's benched in basketball. And what I see is her hustling to take water to the starters during a timeout. And honestly, that's going to be my best memory from her short little basketball career, right? I loved seeing that in her. And you know, the middlest, I love the camaraderie that he has with guys on the baseball team. And they are so bad news bears. They don't games. But you know what? Because they have the right coaches, the right attitudes, they are still having fun. And my youngest little peanut, like, he has always been, from age six, he's always been his best self on the soccer field. And it's just a joy to get to see that. So I feel like the win is when sports can sort of be like this lab for human development and growth in our kids.
I love that.
I do too. And I know personally, one of the reasons I loved your book and I wanted to talk about it on the podcast was just that is exactly was my experience in youth sports. I loved it. I met my closest friends there that were still friends, you know, and I wanted that for my kids. I felt like the stuff I learned in youth sports has carried me into my job, into my relationships. And I think there's just so much good that can come from it. Towards the end, you go into a story that I just wanted to hit on real quick too, because say our listeners have a kid who is getting offers for scholarships in college. Way to go. Congratulations. I thought it was a really beautiful example of, you talk about a woman who had gotten an offer to play, I think it was Division I, but regardless, to play in college, and she declined and did the club volleyball maybe instead. And in my experience too, I got a scholarship for track. I never loved track. It was just kind of one of those things that I happened to be good at. And then I realized, you know, after 2 months of two-a-day practices and a lot of vomiting while running, that I was like, this is just not for me, you know. And thank God my parents were okay with me saying I didn't want to do it my sophomore year or beyond. But I just thought, how, as mama bears, can we rein it in? Because there's got to be pride and ego all wrapped up in seeing that scholarship letter come in the mail, right? So how do we rein that in and make sure our kid wants to play because they love the sport and don't want to, you know, just join a club team, that they really, really love it enough to do it in college, or that they're just trying to make us happy? You know, like, how do we do that? How do we navigate that, do you think?
Yeah, and I think that does need to be, I mean, it's kind of like the sex conversations with our kids. It's not just like once and done. It's something that we're talking about at your different ages and stages. So I feel like that conversation about, you know, why do you like this? What do you hate about your sport is something that's ongoing as we really like use our mama bear to pay attention and to listen well. When my daughter was trying out for basketball, like I saw the pressure that was on her. Well, she's 6 feet tall. So the girls really wanted her to play and the coaches really wanted her to play. And because I played basketball, I kind of sort of really wanted her to play, even though I tried to be so chill and act like it was her decision. And this is totally creepy, but like, if you think, okay, like child, if me and all the girls on the team and the coaches, like if we were all in a horrible airplane accident together, like what would your decision be, right? If none of us had a vote. And of course it's hard, especially if your kiddos are people pleasers, it's hard for them to get there. But I do think as parents, we can communicate just authentically that posture of really wanting the best for them and really paying attention to what it is that they're going to tell us.
Yeah, you're so right. And I think, you know, this question is, it's kind of like the pinnacle, right? Like you get to this finish line and you've spent all this money perhaps, and you've really invested so many hours in the minivan and in the bleachers of getting your kid to this point where there might be a scholarship. And yet you still have to, in order to send your kids off in a healthy, beautiful, productive way, think about the kid, like know the kid, have these conversations of knowing who they are within this culture. And we can do that for sports. We can do that for music. It's anything that we kind of put our hopes into, just checking that and making sure it's for the kid. It's not for you.
Gosh, I think that if our goal as mama bears is to walk to the beat of our own drum, to do the thing that is right for this child or for our family, I'm of the mind that that's really contagious. Because you know what? Other moms see how you're walking your path and they realize that there's freedom in that. So it's like we're not only serving our families, I feel like we're also doing a service to other moms as we sort of live authentically and don't feel like we need to conform to the mold. We're helping them find freedom as well. So it just feels like a big win all the way around.
Yes.
I agree.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, so good.
So Margo, first of all, where can people find you? I know they're going to want to start to follow you. Where can they find your books, your website, all of that? Can you tell them where to find you?
Yeah, well, my funny name is spelled M-A-R-G-O-T, and everybody knows how to spell Starbuck. So MargoStarbuck.com would be the place to connect.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. I'm so happy a listener pointed you out and encouraged us to reach out to you, because I just think this was so good. I think you gave some really great tangible ways that we can engage with our kids and just be real with them so that they're real with us. And just, I mean, it all leads to love, right? And I'm so happy you were here. So thank you for taking your time today with us.
Yeah, thanks so much, Margo.
Thank you so much. It was a treat.
Listeners, today we want to encourage you to just take a hot minute. Just a hot minute. Be real with yourself here. Is your child overplayed or overdanced or overpracticed? When was the last time your family sat down for a home-cooked meal at dinner? What is your end goal with running your child to and fro so many tournaments, band performances, and art camps? Is this really what they want, or is it just their way of seeking approval from you? Our kids are so wise, and they understand far more about the world and about their parents than they ever let on. If the only time you seem pleased and adoring is when they are on the court or in the orchestra, then of course they seem to love doing these things for hours at a time, because they love you and they want to please you. Today, we dare you to make sure your identity isn't the least bit tied up with how your child does on the pitch or in the school. Leslie pitches the soccer field.
I was picturing baseball, so thank you for the clarification.
You're welcome.
I was like,
you're
welcome. Does she mean like the mound? Is this a thing for the mound?
We dare you to really evaluate if your family's attitude towards youth sports is a healthy one, mind, body, and soul for your kids. We're often daring you to parent a little counterculturally, and we do this knowing that it's hard, but it's also worth it. This will be hard, you guys. Trust me. It's so hard. But we believe there is absolutely a way for our kids to take advantage of all the beautiful aspects of child activities without being pushed further than their bodies or minds are currently prepared for. We love our babes with a fierce mama bear kind of love. We dare you to live that in a way that honors the individual inside each of your kids and to delight in them in the everyday mundane moments, not just in their athletic or artistic accomplishments, so that they feel free to explore and makes them unbearably happy.
Nice. So true. And we've got great news, right? Margot has offered one lucky winner a copy of her book, Overplayed, A Parent's Guide to Sanity in the World of Youth Sports. So leave a comment on iTunes. We love those comments and they are meaningful. They help with our iTunes rankings so that we can reach more moms and women and men and all of the people just like you. So leave a comment there and Margot will pick a winner and deliver you that copy. Maybe you don't necessarily feel like you need to read the copy and dig more into this, but maybe you have a friend who could really benefit from this as well. So do that. Also, find us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat and tell us what you thought of this episode. Did we offend you? I'm sorry if we offended you. Let's keep talking about this. Did we kind of reassure you in some ways? Maybe you have these mama bear instincts when it comes to your child's playing time or their practicing time, but you hadn't really put words to it before. So tell us what you think. We love to hear from our listeners. And come back on Wednesday. We are going to share a few ideas of how to survive the holidays mama bear style.
Yes, absolutely. And I just have to say real quick, Leslie, lest our listeners think these kind of episodes don't convict us, we just recorded an episode with a parenting coach. She was amazing, Randy. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the moment that was so convicting for me? And I was like, ah, crap. Because you guys, this is hard. This is hard. So if you were offended or convicted, we are right there with you. Yeah. We love pushing that, right? We are right there.
Oh, for sure. This morning. I was right there just like an hour ago. So
exactly, you guys. So thank you so much. We will see you back here on Wednesday.
See you Wednesday.